Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, it has been 1 week since Florida Governor Ron DeSantis reopened the state under what's known as Phase 3 of the reopening stages since the pandemic began. So what does that mean? Well, for one thing, most restaurants and bars can resume serving at full capacity. And DeSantis says there will be no more penalties against anyone breaking a local mask mandate. Now, that said, the Phase 3 reopening is not rolling out in exactly the same way all across Florida.
Yeah, it's been kind of a confusing week. Not all the state's restaurants and bars are fully reopened. Many local governments are keeping mask orders in place. In meantime, the news today that President Trump and the First Lady have both tested positive for coronavirus renews the focus on how the infection spreads using masks and social distancing.
That's right. Lots to discuss. And right now, Florida, we want you to let us know your thoughts on the big news involving the President and the First Lady. And also, let us know how you feel about the Phase 3 reopening of the state. Whatever corner of Florida you call home, give us a call right now. We'll go to your calls and tweets in a bit. The number to join us, 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup.
Let's start with where the president was supposed to visit tonight in Central Florida. Matthew Petty is with WMFE, our sister station in Orlando. Matthew, welcome back to the Roundup. The president was scheduled to hold a rally tonight in Sanford at the airport there. It's been canceled. What kind of health protocols would have been in place if the rally was to go on?
Right. Thanks for having me back on the show, Tom. And yeah, I mean, the rallies that the president has been holding around the country, I mean, there have been some measures, I guess, but essentially folks who sign up to go to these rallies, you click on the event registration and you kind of click the thing which says you're acknowledging there's an inherent risk of exposure to COVID-19. And by attending the rally, you voluntarily assume all of the risks related to exposure to COVID-19 and agree to hold the president not liable for any illness or injury. So there's that. Obviously, supporters of the president disappointed not to get to see the president in person at rallying in Sanford. And it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, how the presidential campaign handles the next couple of weeks with the president and First Lady and others in quarantine.
Well, the president's daughter was in Orlando earlier this week. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is scheduled to be in Orlando on Saturday. What has the president's campaign been like in Central Florida?
It's been busy. I mean, you point out those two, those two appearances. Corey Lewandowski, who's part of the president's re-election campaign, was up in the Villages on Thursday. He was scheduled to speak at a certain time. He had to actually give his speech a little bit early to rush back to the White House to, you know, take part in a in some briefings there. And I think we all know what those briefings are about now. But yeah, pretty busy hitting all the kind of key places in Florida. I mean, the Villages, as you know, is a stronghold for the Republicans and a place that campaigns past and present have been pretty keen on focusing on. So, yeah, it's been a busy campaign.
All of this, of course, with Phase 3 now 1 week old. What has been the impact of?
I mean, in a word, confusion. When the declaration was made last Friday, we had the mayor of Orange County, speaking to media on Friday afternoon, saying he literally only got his hands on the declaration moments before going in front of the camera. So his complaint was that they really didn't get a lot of heads up from the governor's office that this was going to be happening. He said the first they really had any inkling was watching media reports and seeing the governor talk about, you know, hinting that something was coming earlier in the day. So he and other county leaders in Central Florida had sort of been talking and thinking about how to respond to it. The mayor of Orange County, Jerry Demings, has said essentially, nothing really changes, although the penalties, the ability to impose penalties for people not, following those masking and social distancing orders has been lifted by the governor.
Yeah.
People are really still a little bit reluctant to get out and mingle for good reason.
Well, and the other big news in Orlando, and really for Florida and the economy, is the layoffs that were announced by Disney, about 7,000 people. Universal Theme Park continuing to lay off 5,000, almost 2,000 employees at SeaWorld. How are these layoffs impacted by phase three status?
Well, I mean, it's just not good news, right? I mean, we heard that 6,700 odd non-union employees definitely getting their layoff notices. Those start at the start of December. We got that news earlier in the week. But, you know, 28,000 Disney employees across the country, there's bound to be many, many more in Orlando. The unions are negotiating with the company at the moment to sort of figure out exactly what the layoffs mean, how many people are affected, sort of the healthcare benefits and how long those can continue, those kind of things. And, of course, it's not just Disney, it's not just Universal, it's all the attendant industry. It's the hotels, it's the restaurants, it's those little mom-and-pop stores, you know, the T-shirt vendors along I-Drive. We're all, you know, all of these businesses are affected. And when a big company says they're laying off those staff, they've been furloughed for a long time, that's really an indication that the demand for tourism is just not there at the moment. And that means that, you know, Orange County in Osceola County, Central Florida, we're facing a pretty long, hard road to recovery from here on out.
Yeah, and the Orlando metro area already had the highest unemployment rate of all Florida metro areas back in August at 11% prior to the Disney announcement. Matthew Petty at WMFE in Orlando. Thank you, Matt.
Well, let's head up I-95 to North Florida, where Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry says a countywide mask mandate is going to stay in place for the next 30 days. Now, that order was also in place last week when President Trump held a rally in Jacksonville at Cecil Airport on the city's far west side. About 15,000 people packed an airport hangar there to see Trump, but most of them were not wearing masks. The mayor says the mask order didn't apply to outside venues. For more on how phase three is going in the northeast part of the state, I spoke with WJCT reporter Sky LeBron. Sky LeBron, good to talk to you.
You too, Melissa.
Well, as we talk about the phase three reopening of the state, let's begin with what happened in Jacksonville in recent days, a big Donald Trump rally that had about 15,000 people packed into an airport hangar. That happened just before the governor reopened the state fully.
Yeah, I attended that rally last week. It was on Jacksonville's west side, so it's a bit more rural than the other portions of the city. There were thousands, and I mean thousands, of people there without masks. We also saw local and state officials, including Governor DeSantis, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry, and several congressmen and women and state reps. It didn't appear that they were wearing masks either, although I wasn't staring at them the entire time. Earlier this year, we saw the Tulsa rally that resulted in a super spreader COVID-19 event where numbers rose a couple weeks after the rally was over. So you just hope that this isn't going to be the case in Jacksonville. It did appear that people working the rally were giving out masks at the rallies. It just didn't seem like many people were choosing to wear one.
To wear them. Now, that said, we do still have a mask mandate for Jacksonville, Duval County for another 30 days. That is for indoor locations where you can't socially distance. And what are you hearing from businesses and restaurants about that?
Yeah, so it seems like it's been kind of a mixed bag. There's still many restaurants who are going to continue taking precautions with staff wearing masks and social distancing measures in place. And even with capacity limitations lifted, I've seen several restaurants who are choosing to slowly work themselves back to full capacity rather than lifting it immediately. There are others who are trying to draw in as large of a crowd as they can get. And it's kind of hard to blame them when they've lost so much revenue over the last few months and they're hanging on by a thread. They're just trying to pick their businesses back up.
Sure. That said, some businesses are making the conscious decision to continue with these restrictions, but it really is on the local business to make that call now because under the law, everything's back open.
Yeah, and we've seen that. There's been some local restaurants that have said, hey, we think that things are actually moving a little too quickly, so we're going to continue with our limitations for the foreseeable future. It is an interesting move. I want to go back to that mask mandate for just a second with Mayor Curry, who has executive control over all of Duval County. He extended that local mask mandate in under another 30 days. We've seen the county to the south of us, St. John's County, St. Augustine, lifted their mask mandate. To the north of us in Nassau County, we saw them lift the mask mandate. And it's just kind of a surprising move that we've seen it continued here in Duval. with mandates and orders getting repealed, especially considering how closely Curry has aligned himself with Governor DeSantis. Now, with that being said, Duval County has one of the weaker mask mandates with no real language about enforcement of it. And over the months, we haven't really heard much about that enforcement. We've seen bars and restaurants and some larger department stores where people are beginning to shed their masks already.
WJCT Sky LeBron, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Melissa.
We're talking about Phase 3, 1 week old, statewide in Florida. Share your experiences at 305-995-1800. Your phone call's coming up in a matter of moments at 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Ryan Vasquez is with our sister station in Gainesville, WUFT. Ryan, what's the state of the virus on campus at the University of Florida?
Well, Tom, it's a far quieter campus than most fall semesters here, so we already have less people here, but we are still seeing some trending issues with some COVID. But for the most part, you see people wearing masks, instances on campus when they have to be. And, you know, they're in unique situations, however, that can make preventing the spread hard. For instance, we're hearing most reports of spread are coming from dormitories or sorority and fraternity housing, but we have not had a report yet on campus of someone catching COVID from a class or other interactive setting.
We saw a spike of infections at UF right after Labor Day. They have certainly decreased considerably since then. How is the university handling infection control?
As you mentioned, we've seen that number taper off. Usually you see about a two-week kind of process after a bump like Labor Day.
Yeah.
But the university and county, as they see that shift to Phase 3, they have expressed some concern that we might see the numbers tick back up. And the county even this week mentioned as much, saying that they're worried about it and to continue wearing your mask. But university has dorms where they quarantine students, and that number currently sits at about 7% occupancy, down nearly half from that post-Labor Day bump. And they've ramped up testing for faculty and students in the past few weeks, made walk-up testing more available, and they've gone to a saliva testing model. Hmm. University is also employing an interesting method of monitoring where they are analyzing the wastewater coming from dormitories on campus to determine if there is a COVID outbreak in that particular dormitory.
Hmm. What does Phase 3 look like on and around campus? You mentioned masks. What's the state of a mask mandate at UF and in the greater Gainesville area?
Well, as it currently stands, mask mandate is still in place. That goes for going into buildings. And about a week after we got into school for this fall semester, they made it mandatory on property, too, outside, unless you could socially distance. So that meant that at the hospitals and in the university, if you were outdoors on campus on property, you had to wear your mask as well. But for what Phase 3 looks like on campus, not much has really changed from what we've seen at the beginning of the semester. Around campus, however, we've seen differing responses. A lot of local restaurants have committed to keeping their processes in place that they had to keep people safe, and they publicly said so. But bars are a little bit different. They're really excited to ramp things up.
Ryan, I've got less than a minute here, but a big test this weekend, right, with the home football game for the Gators.
Absolutely. We saw a lot of students last week celebrating the first home game where they had a lot of people outside not wearing masks and celebrating. This home game is going to be a different beast, but no tailgating is allowed on campus. It's been banned for the semester, but that doesn't mean they can't tailgate or party off campus.
Yeah. Ryan Vasquez heads up the news team at WUFT in Gainesville. Thanks for your time today, Ryan.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, let's go now to reporter Danny Rivero of WLRN as we round robin across the state. Danny, South Florida has been the hardest hit area of the Sunshine State from COVID. So how is Phase 3 being implemented where you are?
Right. So I think it's important to just, before I answer that, take a step back. You know, the South Florida has, since the beginning of the pandemic, been treated differently by the state government. We were put on delay into moving in Phase 2 early on, as opposed to the rest of the counties in the state. So here in South Florida, in Miami-Dade, Broward County, this blanket move to Phase 3 has been met with a little bit of surprise from a lot of local elected officials and frankly, just a little bit of wariness. There's explicit worry about the position that this could put South Florida in. For instance, when it comes to reopening bars and nightclubs, our mayor in Miami-Dade County, Carlos Jimenez, just a couple of weeks ago said you know, I don't think the nightclubs and bars will be reopening until we get a vaccine. Well, now with Governor DeSantis's order, they're open now. So there's a lot of just very wide open skepticism about how this will all play out. So we've had some politicians, like say the mayor of Miami Beach, Dan Gelber, he called it a political decision that's motivated more by an upcoming election rather than the actual, you know, recommendations of public health officials.
Right.
So it's been a lot of skepticism.
So local officials are pushing back then somewhat on the governor. We're hearing the mayor of Fort Lauderdale is saying businesses still have to comply, wear masks for both employees and customers. But since the governor is now saying there can be no enforcement of a mask mandate like that, how are they going to get any compliance?
Right. So this is where there's one blanket order across the state, but say in Miami-Dade County, the county has interpreted it in a certain way because the order said that money can't be collected from fines issued because of any mask mandates or local restrictions. So Miami-Dade County has taken the view that, okay, you can't collect on it, but that doesn't mean you can't issue them. So the government locally is still issuing citations. They're just postponing the actual collection of it until whenever the COVID-19 emergency declaration kind of times out. So they're looking at it as we can still do enforcement, you just can't collect it until
can't
later
collect
day.
Let me ask you quickly about schools. The state is forcing schools in Broward and Miami-Dade counties to open for brick and mortar instruction earlier than they had wanted to, beginning Monday in Miami-Dade schools. What's the reaction from parents and teachers to that?
Right. So as with most things, I mean, there's a mixed bag. You have some people who are very happy to have their kids go back to school, especially people that are, you know, have to go in. Essential workers have been put in a very tough position this whole time, having to basically choose to work or to do childcare. It's been very tough for some people. But there's also, you know, from a lot of parents, there's a lot of anger about this. There's a lot of feeling that this will put their children and their families, especially for multi-generation households, at risk because more kids into crowded classrooms, and you know, not all of them have the same air purification capacity. That it could, you know, it could put it in a position where it would spread, and then that could be taken home, and then someone older in the family who's more at risk of getting severely impacted by a COVID infection could be put at risk by that too.
So much anxiety about this still, as we've been hearing from all of our public radio reporters across Florida. Even though the state is reopening, the virus is still with us, and we do need to remind folks of that. Thank you so much, Danny Rivero of WLRN, for sharing an update from South Florida. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Still to come, an epidemiologist gives her take on phase three in Florida. What are your questions for the doctor? 305-995-1800. Line them up now. 305-995-1800. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We're talking about the phase three reopening in the state of Florida. That's 1 week old, and the state of the coronavirus. Clearly renewed interest in COVID-19 with President Trump and the First Lady acknowledging a positive test result early this morning. We're just getting word, according to the New York Times, that former Vice President Joe Biden and his wife, Jill, have tested negative for the coronavirus, according to the Biden campaign. 305-995-1800, your phone calls. 305-995-1800, your experience with phase three, the questions that you have about the state of COVID-19 here during this pandemic in Florida. Dr. Cindy Prince is back with us, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Florida. Dr. Prince, thanks again for your time. In terms of the infection, was the state ready for phase three, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, you know, certainly we're looking at different factors of economics, you know, in the midst of a pandemic. And, you know, we've certainly had a lowering of cases over the past couple of months. It's gone into more of a plateau at this point. We're still not at the point or the low point where we were when we sort of came out of, you know, May into the phase two opening and saw that really large increase in cases. So my concern is we do still have a lot of COVID-19 circulating in Florida. And then, you know, the more you open up, the more people are going to, in this case, get close to each other, potentially in bars and restaurants. So for me, it is a concern to move into this phase.
Yeah, we're hearing from folks across the state on the phone and on Twitter. Paula in Jacksonville tweets the Florida Roundup. My family and I are continuing to encourage and model mask wearing in the coffee shop that we own. We did regretfully modify the message on our sandwich board about this since the governor seems to think lifting restrictions is okay. Lots of calls on this. It's 305-995-1800. Join us. Shelley is in Boca Raton. Hi, Shelley. You're a business owner?
Excuse me. Yes, I... Sorry.
Oh, sorry to hear you coughing. Hope it's nothing serious.
No, actually, I've been waiting, and I just, when you said my name, I said, okay, I'm on. Yes, I'm a business owner in Palm Beach County in Broward. We own seven hair salons throughout both counties, and when we got back to work, we implemented a very, very strict mask mandate and social distancing mandate for all our employees and all our clients. And I have to tell you, we're so pleased with the success that we've had because we've been open now for well over 2.5 months, and we serve thousands of clients, and we have not had any cases at all, not mm-hmm. amongst our clients that we've heard about and not amongst our staff. And we have over 40 hairstylists that work for us. And the way we're looking at this is our path to survival if we want to stay in business. The worst thing we could do right now is loosen things up and allow more leniency in terms of just the protection that's required, because we believe that the mask wearing has kept us in business.
Yeah. I want to thank you so much for modeling that good behavior with your staff and for letting us know what's going on at your business, Shelley. And I'm so glad to hear that your salons are doing all right and making it through this time successfully. Thank you, Shelley, for that. That's Shelley in Boca Raton calling into the Florida Roundup. So, Dr. Prinz, you know, with the phase three reopening of Florida, basically, it's now on the individual business owner, like Shelley or Paula, who we heard from in Jacksonville. They now can choose how they respond to the pandemic. There is no mandate to do the kinds of restrictions that we were under earlier in the year. But I think what is causing so much concern still for so many Florida residents is that we know that a mask, universal mask wearing, makes a big difference. And so, as an epidemiologist, do you differ with the governor's decision to loosen all of those restrictions and not really enforce any kind of mask penalties for people that don't follow the protocols?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the idea of mask penalties, you know, we need to model that good behavior as Shelley was doing. You know, penalties, whether they work or not, you know, people will often, if they're not intending to wear a mask, they can sometimes try to skirt that system no matter what. But, you know, certainly we want to keep sending the public health message that, you know, masks are important and social distancing is important. And so, you know, this being up to the business owners, it would be my hope that business owners would continue to try to determine ways that they can work, make a living, and keep going, but at the same time, protect their employees and protect their customers like Shelley's doing. You know, I do have concern about folks who are working in some of these businesses and they get a lot of exposure to people. And, you know, if we're not enforcing mask wearing, if we're not, you know, even really encouraging mask wearing, and if we're certainly not requiring social distancing, then it does become a concern for people who are working at some of these places.
Dr. Prince, the statewide daily infection rate, according to the State Department of Health, is just below 5% on this Friday as we're talking. We're 1 week into the phase three. What is a level of local or statewide infection that would raise alarms for you?
I think what raises alarms for me is when I just start to see a steady increase in cases. So, you know, if you watch the cases on the Florida Department of Health website, you'll see that they go up and down, of course, depending on levels of testing and what's going on. But, you know, if I think back to early June again, you know, I remember seeing those cases really start to trend up. The first 3 or 4 days, I said, okay, well, you know, maybe this is just a blip. But then, you know, if you start to see that over a week, 10 days, and you see that you've got a consistent increase in cases over time, that's when you have to start to worry. And I would say that what we saw last time was cases increasing first in some of our denser areas, some of our more urban areas, and then, you know, followed later by some of those cases going up in rural areas. So, you know, keeping an eye on the cases overall in Florida, but then keeping an eye on places like Miami-Dade, you know, like Orange County and some of our larger areas to see what's happening.
We're speaking with Dr. Cindy Prince, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Florida. Your chance to talk to the good doctor, share your story about phase three as Florida is 1 week into it. 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. In St. Pete, Zach is on line four. Go ahead, Zach. Thanks for holding on.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, you know, my wife, she's currently battling cancer and she's undergoing chemotherapy treatment. So she's immune compromised. And I'm the sole breadwinner. You know, I work and I do pretty much all of the errands. So we can't really afford to get everything delivered. And it's really frustrating because, you know, with the governor lifting restrictions, that's kind of really my lifeline. You know, I work in healthcare, and with restrictions lifted, I'm at a higher risk at work and just in general. And I mean, the risk is there for me to get infected and for me to pass it on to my wife, and she could easily die. I mean, to put it bluntly. And it just really frustrates us because we don't go out. We don't really do anything fun. And still, nobody seems to care.
Zach, let me ask you, 1 week into phase three, are you modifying your behaviors at all, given your clear concerns?
Yeah, I mean, since the virus started, we don't really do much besides buy groceries and you know, other necessities. I am thinking about possibly having to just get everything delivered to limit my exposure there. But even then, you know, at the same time, working in healthcare, that's where my main risk lies. And if somebody, you know, goes to a bar, goes to a restaurant, and then goes to a facility I'm working at, it's an easy exposure event.
Zach, I appreciate you sharing your story. Dr. Prince, how about the message to Floridians with Zach who may live with people with underlying conditions that may make them more vulnerable to the seriousness of this virus? How should they be thinking or, frankly, even behaving here during phase three?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously an added stress for Zach that, you know, what is already a very difficult time. You know, I think the message to those folks is as much as possible, continue to socially distance and continue to wear a mask. I hear Zach, that's not always possible. He's working in healthcare. Yeah. You know, calling on your friends and your neighbors, trying to get them to help out where possible. Can they run some errands? Can they buy groceries? Can they do some of those things for you so that you don't have to have that exposure? But, you know, certainly remembering that these are people who could be at higher risk of poor outcomes with COVID-19 if they get infected. So, you know, we don't want them getting exposed.
It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about the reopening of Florida under phase three. Our expert with us on the show is Dr. Cindy Prince, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Florida. And there have been outbreaks on college campuses. We have a call from Olivia in Tallahassee. Hi, Olivia. What are things like in your neck of the woods?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm a student at Florida State University, and I've been seeing a lot of videos online of students going out to bars and clubs. I personally, like, haven't been participating in that because I...
Oh, we lost her call, but...
Let me see if we can bring that back.
Yeah,
here,
as we try to... There she is. Go ahead, Olivia.
Oh, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. I was just speaking, but I must have lost you guys. Anyways, I'm a student at Florida State University, and I am immunocompromised, and I have been seeing a lot just online of my fellow students going out to different bars and clubs every night of the week, you know, with no masks. And it's quite disappointing, especially considering Tallahassee is 32304, the zip code that FSU is in, is one of the poorest zip codes in the state. So when you consider the residents of Tallahassee, it puts a lot of people at a high risk.
Yeah. Olivia, and I'm sorry that you have those concerns, and I do appreciate your position there. And that's Olivia calling from the FSU campus. Dr. Prince, in the minute or so we have left before a break, the concern on college campuses is real. Your thoughts quickly.
Sure, yeah, it is a real concern. And certainly people can individually take steps to protect themselves, but they also need to trust that their friends are doing what they need to do in order to not, you know, wind up contracting COVID-19 and, you know, exposing them to it. So, you know, that becomes a larger concern. And then also the concern about positive cases potentially going into the communities around the university.
Yeah, and the governor did issue what he called a student bill of rights, giving college students essentially carte blanche to resume socializing. That has certainly upset those who are immune compromised, like that, like the caller we just heard from. Well, I want to thank you for your expertise and your insights. Great to have you on the Florida Roundup. She is Dr. Cindy Prince, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Florida, as we've been discussing the Phase 3 reopening of the state this week. Dr. Prince, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And you are listening to the Florida Roundup, coming to you from Florida Public Radio.
The Phase 3 reopening of Florida during the COVID-19 pandemic, coming, of course, during election season. It is a matter of a few days or a few weeks away before Floridians will see those vote-by-mail ballots. Perhaps you've already received yours. Monday is the deadline to register to vote in next month's election. Voting is already underway in some places.
That's right. And during the next few weeks, we will share the stories of voters from across Florida's critical I-4 corridor, the corridor that can swing an election. It runs from St. Petersburg to Daytona Beach and covers dramatic demographic shifts. Today, we hear from James Moore in Osceola County.
Hello, my name is James Moore. I'm 27 years old. I'm from Osceola County, Florida, and I'm currently registered a Democrat. However, I do change my party affiliation because Florida is a closed primary state. So I am currently in Osceola. If I go across the street behind my house, it's Orange County. And if I go about a mile west, I'm in Polk County. And if I cross the street there, I'm in Lake County. So when I technically live in Osceola, I'm in this Four Corners area where everything's done between multiple counties. We looked at a lot at the state government here, I believe. Of course, there are county ordinances that you abide by. It can be tricky. I'll use the pandemic as an example. If I went to the Target down the street at the beginning of COVID, I had to wear a mask. Not because Target said so, but because Osceola County said you have to wear a mask. Now, if I crossed 192 and went to the Publix on the other side in Orange County, then I didn't have to wear a mask. It's an interesting place to live because you jump counties and there's different rules between counties in a COVID time. Issue-wise, climate change has always been a big one for me. One that's not widely talked about and one that I kind of gravitate to is transportation, the public transportation system. And this falls more on a local level. So national level, climate change, local level, public transit. The problem with public transit is it takes so long. It may be cheaper, but you know, time is worth something as well. Where I think public transit fails is in the sense of, yes, you can get from point A to point B, but it's going to take you much longer. And there's not a well-designed system, particularly in the state of Florida. Post-pandemic, I still gravitate towards those, but safety and the health aspect is more on my radar now than it was before. So when it comes to health issues, I think what I struggle with most is when people see leaders doing a certain thing or not practicing what's being preached, that does not set a good tone or a good precedent. When I think about health safety, I want to see people in office practicing what is being preached in the way of safety, practicing social distancing, practicing wearing a mask. If people at the top are not doing it, then why should I do that? I do have hope that things will get better. A lot of people, unfortunately, have lost that. I know some people that, you know, say this is the end times. No, let's back up a minute. People thought the Cold War was the end times. People thought World War II was the end times. You know, no, we keep moving forward, and I have faith in humanity to do that.
Well, that was James Moore of Osceola County. WUSF's Jessica Mazzaros produced this audio postcard. It's part of America Amplified, a national reporting initiative supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And we will hear more of this reporting, hearing from voters along Florida's I-4 corridor. Here on the Florida Roundup, we'll bring these segments to you between now and Election Day, because, of course, voters in the I-4 corridor can decide national elections. So keep listening for that.
When we come back on this program, why a former Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice who voted not to manually recount votes in 2000 says President Trump is a threat to democracy. That's ahead. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, he presided over the Florida recount, remember that, between Bush and Gore some 20 years ago. Now, the retired Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court is speaking out about this election.
Justice Charles Wells sent an email outlining his concerns to friends of both political parties and then also gave the Sun Sentinel permission to publish that email. In it, he said that President Trump's threat to not accept the outcome of the election is a grave and real threat to the democracy. So let's talk about this here. Are you concerned about election results? How will you cast your ballot this fall? 305-995-1800, the opportunity to speak with the retired Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court and election law, 305-995-1800 and at Florida Roundup on Twitter.
We're pleased to welcome Justice Wells to the Florida Roundup. Judge, thanks for being with us here on the show.
I'm glad to be with you and appreciate this opportunity.
It's good to talk to you. I wanted to begin by asking you, though, if I could, a quick question. You say you felt compelled to speak out about this election because of your unique experience on the Florida Supreme Court during the 2000 recount, which so many of us remember and lived through. You wrote a dissenting opinion in that matter, and that played a part in George Bush ultimately becoming the president. Before we get into your concerns about the Trump presidency, I was hoping you could enlighten our listeners about how that all played out and your role in that.
Well, we found in 2000 that there was a limited period of time in which Florida could protect its electoral votes. And that date was on December the 12th in 2000. This year, that date will be December the 8th. But in 2000, the second opinion that the Florida Supreme Court issued was not until December the 8th. And I dissented because I felt that it was necessary in order to protect Florida's electoral votes that we go ahead and have a decision as to Florida's electors that had been evidenced by the vote of the people who had voted. And so I did dissent.
Right.
The majority.
Yeah. And so you lived through that incredibly intense time of jurisprudence for the state of Florida and played a decisive role. You now are speaking out because you say you believe the president is a grave threat to democracy because he has said he will not accept a peaceful transfer of power should he lose the election. You are also urging Florida residents, including Republicans, to vote for Joe Biden, since Florida is a swing state and it could play a decisive role. I want to ask you, what's your response to Republicans listening right now who might disagree with you?
My response is that it is necessary for people to have confidence in the election. We have had no fraud in Florida. In fact, I wrote in my opinion in the 2000 election that we had had no fraud. There were mistakes that were made by reason of the laws in existence at that time, which have now been changed. But the fact is, we have to have confidence in our vote. And I feel like that it is contrary to having that confidence for the president to be saying that there's fraud in our elections. There is not, or that the election will be rigged. It will not be rigged. And Florida is an important state, and people need to get out and vote, and they need to vote early so that the votes will be counted and Florida will have its voice heard in the Electoral College.
Yeah, Florida does pre-count ballots. You know, we could have a result in Florida on election night because they start counting the ballots the minute they start coming in. You mentioned electors, Judge. What are your concerns about a contested election here in Florida? If we were to see a very close result here, just as we did in 2000, and there might be a push among some Republicans in the state to call for a new slate of electors to certify the results for the president. The president has made indications he might ask states to do that and that it could go once again to the Supreme Court.
As in 2000, in 2020, there is a date in the federal election law that pertains to the Electoral College that would end all controversies and contests about Florida's vote. That date is December the 8th. And I believe our leaders need to be prepared to get the count, have any disagreements resolved by that December the 8th deadline. If it's not, then it goes over to Congress. And the Congress on January the 6th would open the ballots. And that's by the law that has been adopted in respect to electors. That January the 6th date, if there's a disagreement and the House and Senate do not agree, then it would default to the governor. That law has never been tested. And so there would be a chance that we would not have a president on January the 20th. That is not an acceptable result. And so I believe that everyone needs to understand the law and be prepared so that we will have a result that can be depended upon in accordance with the law and that we do not have further litigation. I think further litigation is detrimental to the future of this country as to the election of the president that would come into existence on January the 20th, 2021.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We're speaking with the former Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court, Charlie Wells. He presided over the state Supreme Court during the 2000 Bush versus Gore recount court fight. Justice Wells, I'm wondering, given your position, you obviously have a pulpit from which to speak and prominence from which to speak from and experience. Or are you satisfied with what you're hearing from current election officials, county supervisors of election, state elections officials, regarding their vocal support about the veracity and validity of the election results to come?
I have not heard anything from local officials that causes me to doubt that they will perform their function properly. properly and efficiently.
Understood, Justice. But my question is, are you satisfied with their with what they're communicating today, as the president has sown doubt? The president, even in the debate this week with former Vice President Biden, spoke about allegations, unproven allegations of fraud. Are you satisfied that local election officials here in Florida today, as vote-by-mail ballots are out, early voting is to begin in a few weeks, are doing enough to reinforce the validity of the election?
The most I can say is I have not heard from local officials negative comments. I think that it really comes down to the leadership across the state to make sure that people understand that everything is being has been done. And I think those comments need to be done on a recurring basis by the county supervisors of election to make sure that this election is going to be efficiently run. But I have no reason to doubt that that's happening right now.
A listener tweets, please ask the judge whether Governor DeSantis has the ability to replace electors. I've heard from what I consider a reliable source that if Florida goes for Biden, DeSantis would replace the slate of electors with a new slate of Trump-supporting electors. There has been some reporting to this effect in The Atlantic, Justice, that the Trump administration has been considering that in Republican-dominated legislatures like Florida's. What are your thoughts about this?
That would only come into play if there is no resolution by January the 6th, and the House and Senate did not agree on who were was legitimate electors from a state. And I believe that that will not happen. It would not, definitely will not happen if the Democrats control the Senate. Coming up in this election, because it will be the new Congress and the new Senate sworn in on January the 3rd that would make that decision.
Justice Wells, part of your decision in 2000, you spoke about the calendar and the tight time frame. Are courts equipped today to resolve any election dispute quickly?
I know that the Florida Supreme Court has worked diligently to prepare for that. And I have written an article and tried to communicate broadly to the courts across the country that they need to be prepared for this very short time frame. It is a short time frame in which to resolve any contest and get within a safe harbor provision intended by each state. And so, and that, as I've said, is December the 8th. And so the most I can say is that I urge all courts to understand and to have prepared for a very short time frame.
And Justice, quickly, real quick, are you going to vote early in person or vote by mail?
I'm going to vote by mail.
Vote by mail. Well, I want to thank you so much, Justice Charles Wells. He's the retired Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court. He was on the bench during the 2000 recount. Justice Wells, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is our show, The Florida Roundup, coming to you by WJCT Public Media in Jax, WLRN Public Media in Miami, with Denise Royal and Heather Schatz, producers.
Jason Zapka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. Director of Radio Ops at WLRN is Peter Meritz. He's also our Technical Director. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, Josh Torres. Our theme music from Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend.